Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Hey, thanks for spending Wednesday night here with us on Tech 5 Radio. This is Jonathan Kerstang.
And this is Audrey Rousseau.
So, Audrey, I tell you what, over the past few months, you've been in and out of the office a lot. I've been trying to track you down, and I can't always find you. And then I find out that you're, like, hanging out with a lot of different tech companies in Pittsburgh, and you've been kind of surveying new hires who have been recruited from outside of Pittsburgh. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, Audrey's up to some research again. And I like this because I know it is near and dear. It is your passion that we draw as many people to Pittsburgh from around the world as we possibly can. And you're leaving no stone unturned to find strategies and ways to do that. So what have you been up to?
So here's the situation. The situation, and just to set the table really quickly,
right.
Growth matters. Attracting people to a lot of the opportunities that are in this region that are developing matters. You need people who want to be here. And we don't produce enough of those kinds of people who actually can help develop some of these companies. We do amazing things here, and we have incredible companies, and there are some of the best and brightest people in the world working to solve just problems that only people can imagine, from autonomous vehicles to solving, you know, really hard problems in life sciences and curing things. But what's really interesting to me is that we have just been sort of tapping our way in terms of this growth. We haven't been soaring. And I'm not saying that we need to soar. I'm saying we need to grow a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, exactly.
We
a little bit.
A little bit.
It's kind of sad.
Not be declining.
It's kind of sad when you say that. I mean, you're bringing a tear to my eye. Like,
no, but we need to grow a little bit. But the good news
is that, I want to say soaring.
But some of the grand news is that so many of these companies are attracting people. They actually really are.
I know.
And while the numbers might not be revealing, I am passionate about meeting them.
Yes.
I want to talk to these people and find out, what do you think?
Exactly.
And so my criteria was, I cast a wide net, and my criteria was, could I come, buy a pizza,
What kind of pizza did you bring?
I don't know. It was delivered, but they were happy. They said, if you feed us, we're happy to come.
We'll tell you anything you want
to
know.
Yeah, so have them come and just really, you know, sort of have an informal conversation around the table and talk about, what do you like about Pittsburgh? And these people have just moved here within 6 months or within maybe 3 to 4 years.
3 to 4 years.
That's
okay.
Sort of my time frame.
Gotcha.
You know?
Okay.
And they have to all be people who have, you know, the job titles that are really missing in terms of demand. So they're computer scientists, they're software engineers, advanced kind of skills that, you know, the world needs. The world needs these jobs.
Right.
So fascinating that, like, I'm not ready. I'm just going to tease you with some of the information.
You're still in
scientific.
Process.
I mean, this is not scientific.
No. And you know, you're still in the process of meeting with more and more companies.
Yes. And if you're listening and you want to reach out to me and you have just moved here and you want to be a part of this,
yes,
just send me an email. Just go to our website at pghtech.org. Go to the website and you'll find me.
Go
there.
To the About Us, Audrey's
and
contact.
Just so. Contact me. But what's so fascinating is it really depends on where you last moved from.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So that's the piece that's really fascinating. So if
I guess
you
moved
here
sense.
From L.A.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? You, so as one kind gentleman said, oh, my God, I could buy like a neighborhood.
I could buy a neighborhood.
I could buy a neighborhood here.
Almost.
Right?
For what he spent for a two-bedroom in some place.
Right. And that was sort of funny.
Okay.
And there are some people who come here. Like, I met one gentleman from Utah, and he said, wow, you really have a lot of traffic.
And yet
other people, depending upon where they come from Northern Virginia.
Are like, this is
or
nothing.
Or from the West Coast, are like, traffic. This is just a little hiccup.
Right.
So that's sort of fascinating. But there's a couple of common themes.
Okay.
A couple of common themes. Not everyone wants to live in the city.
No.
everyone, whether they have kids or not, want great schools.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, that goes without saying.
Right. So that's something that matters to us in the city.
And that probably then drives some people outside the
yes.
city. So why
yes.
their people are saying they're living, they're choosing right. the suburbs, right?
Right. So that's okay. really a common
Makes
thing.
Sense. I like that.
And they're concerned about on-ground transportation. The fact that we don't have easy ways
to get around, yeah.
not use your vehicle. You know, a car.
Yeah, exactly.
Meaning, what else do we have? And that it's just unreliable. So from point to point, it becomes unreliable.
Interesting.
And great. So even if they live in the suburbs, they want to be able to use a bus.
What's the furthest away someone that you've talked to has moved to Pittsburgh? What location?
Cranberry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because people like that. They actually, people from the West Coast, what's interesting,
yeah.
tend to like that kind of
that
area.
Kind of
they
stuff.
Like to be able to use their car. They
right.
like to be able to know that there's a whole bunch of
Yeah, because in
cars.
Los Angeles, you live in suburbs
right.
for the most part.
So they sort of like that.
I live in downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But I was
and
saying,
they like the fact that they can drive north out of Cranberry and actually be in some cool places that they could.
You can be in Presque Isle before you know it.
Right. But I'm serious.
Yeah,
they're,
exactly.
Someone brought up Cook Forest.
Well, Cook's
right.
Forest is beautiful, and that's just
right.
like a half an hour drive from there. But what I was saying was also the furthest distance away someone has come from to be in Pittsburgh. So anyone from
Japan.
Japan.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
wow,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what
oh,
I'm
yeah,
talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Someone from
yeah.
Japan you've talked
yeah.
to.
Someone from Japan.
They must have had some interesting insights about Pittsburgh.
Well, but here's the other common theme. The other common theme is really about food. And all these people come from so many different places, but they all have a common theme that we may think we have a food scene.
Right.
But we don't.
Well, from the standpoint of like grocery stores, maybe there is that what you're talking
They're
about?
They're talking about grocery stores
right.
and variety.
Okay.
You know, they were really, a lot of people were
so like
really
whole,
like
the,
farmers markets and getting.
Okay.
Fresh food
right.
and having little kinds of shops.
Like specialty type shops.
Yeah, little specialty shops.
And
that the strip.
I was going to say the strip doesn't cut it.
The strip doesn't cut it because it's not open late enough.
Whoa, interesting.
And they like to be able to shop like at 8,
Holy
9,
see.
10 o'clock at night. Not like when they're like, the strip is awesome, but you can't use it.
You can't buy a big wedge of cheese at midnight.
Right. We want to be able to buy a big wedge of cheese. At 11 o'clock at
exactly,
night and
right.
know that that's going to be around.
Wow, that's amazing. Like, that's absolutely
like,
amazing.
That's having a vibrant city.
You have to keep doing this
Isn't
research
it amazing?
Because this could be significant.
It is significant. These people all want to be here. They all are saying because
they're liking
the work,
it so far.
They,
right,
well, they like
the work.
The work.
But they don't like the food scene,
well,
the grocery scene. Yeah.
Yeah, just having 24/7 interesting things. Like if the strip was open more around the clock.
Yeah.
And there was good transport.
I have an idea for a business now, I think.
It was and then the other thing they talk about is that downtown is a food desert.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, downtown.
Even though there are some
I thought there's lots of restaurants downtown.
No. There's no
like
grocery stores,
right.
right?
Yeah, exactly.
No little kind of bodegas,
you need your Twinkies.
No little, right. There's nothing. There's nothing there.
So this is really just cool.
The beginning.
Right.
So I'm just giving you a little bit of a teaser.
We need regular reports.
And I will give regular reports. We're definitely going to hear more from me on that. I'm trying to take, you know, some qualitative notes that maybe we can put into and see if there's any kind of patterns that we can address.
Okay.
But it's been so much fun. Like
Love
getting
that.
A chance to talk to these people and hearing their views. It just keeps me on my toes.
I love it, man. No, I think this is cool.
And they're all in tech.
This is how things start to change right. then. When people that are in your position start kind of doing the unexpected a little bit and gather some information and can find ways to start maybe making some actions happen around that. I think it's freaking awesome. So tonight, our show, we've got a double deep dive with Morgan Lewis talking about immigration law so we can get more people here and keep more people here that would normally have to leave because, as you said, we need as many folks here from around the world, Audrey. That's just really important. And Morgan Lewis has a great immigration practice, so I'm excited to hear from them, what they have to say. And we also have our guy George Potts from the Fifth Influence stopping by talking about all the changing rules on social media when it comes to political advertising and fun stuff like that. So we're taking a quick break, and we are coming right back with Morgan Lewis. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Rousseau.
We're from the the Pittsburgh Technology Council, and you can learn more about us at pghtech.org. We'll be right back. Oh, thank you for spending your Wednesday night here with us on Tech Vibe Radio. This is Jonathan Kirshner.
And this is Audrey Rousseau.
And Audrey, I know it's near and dear to your heart.
Something, and yours.
And mine, of course.
Yes.
Absolutely. The idea that we need the best and the brightest from around the world to make our tech sector happen. Simple as that. It comes down to people. Technology is nothing without the people.
Right. And it's important for a region like Pittsburgh,
yep,
which actually has been on a slow, steady decline, not an uptick, just like many cities that are like our size. But we have so many cool things going on here, and so many people are educated right here in our backyard. And they work for the best and brightest. They are the best and brightest, and it's really important for us to keep them here. So we're going to jump into a topic with two lovely women who are here, who I'd like them to introduce themselves and talk about who they work for and what they do. So I'm going to start with...
Hi there. My name is Shannon Donnelly. I am a partner with Morgan Lewis. It's one of the nation's leading law firms, and we have offices all around the United States, including right here in Pittsburgh. Our practice primarily is an immigration practice within our employment group, and we work not only with U.S.-based companies, but global companies to help move their talent around the world. And I am now leading, I'm not just a partner in the immigration group, but I am now leading our outbound or our global practice, which means when we can't keep people here, we can help send them wherever they need to go around the world so that
wow.
we can retain global talent.
So
that's what I'm talking
I need
about.
To talk to you offline about that then.
Happy
because
to.
We travel around the world with a lot of our companies and members to look at opportunities for them around the world. So most recently, we were in the UK, yep. But we've been to places like China and to Sweden and to Spain. And
things are slowing down a little bit right now in APAC, in the Asia Pacific.
Right. But that's okay. It's only now.
Yeah, but there are a lot of countries out there that are taking advantage of the U.S., position right now,
yeah,
and we're kind of
Canada.
Closing our border. Yep, Canada's wide open with Brexit. UK is starting to open their borders again too to increase talent. So
yeah.
there are a lot
That's
of opportunities.
Great.
Very much. And which office are you out of?
I am based in the Washington D.C. office.
Yeah. And you're coming into Pittsburgh to talk to us about immigration, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah,
you brought somebody with you who's also not always hanging out in Pittsburgh from Miami.
That's right. My name is Laura Garvin. I'm of counsel with Morgan Lewis. I have been practicing for about 15 years, and my career has been pretty much focused exclusively on employment-based immigration. And I have had the pleasure of working with Shannon my entire career, so good partnership.
Yeah. And Laura, you're from?
And I am. I am a born and bred Yinzer.
We
from,
like that. We think that's pretty cool.
The Pittsburgh area. So although I do, I am based in Miami, beautiful Miami. I have the pleasure of being able to come up and visit our Pittsburgh office.
So it's
well.
Great.
Yeah.
It's exciting up here now.
I
it's
love it.
It's probably very different.
It's changed much in 15 years.
It
that's
is.
For sure.
Yeah, I left in 2005, and it feels like a completely
right.
different city.
It is.
It really is.
Absolutely. So let's jump into
yeah,
this.
Yeah, let's jump in. Let's talk about some of the topics, some of the things that are actually on the forefront of the work that you do. So where do you want to start? I'm going to lean over to Shannon. Where do you want to start?
I think we should probably start with what's keeping our clients up at night right now. And what's keeping our clients up at night right now is the H-1B cap.
Oh, yeah.
And the H-1B cap registration. And so for those who don't know, the H-1B visa is a visa that allows our U.S.-based employers to retain professional talent. It's for individual positions that require a degree in a specific field. This is the type of visa that is typically used once someone has may have been here in the U.S. going to school, and then they want to transition and stay here more permanently. And the H-1B visa is the vehicle in order to do that. And this year, there have been many changes to the H-1B visa program. And I think where we need to start is right now, every year, there are 65,000 of these H-1B visas available.
Just 65,000?
Just 65,000.
Why can't we just double that number? Triple it?
Well, we would need a congressional mandate.
Well, come on, let's make that happen. Jeez.
Okay. I don't know about that.
So 65, how quickly do they go?
So there are 65 with an additional 20,000 for individuals who have gotten a U.S. master's degree or higher. They go typically on the very first day of submission.
So one day of submission and they're snatched up.
Yeah, within the last 3 years, I would say there have been, on average, about 200,000 applications for those 65,000 slots.
And so what's the criteria? How do they ascertain who gets the 65 plus the 20,000?
Well, that has changed over the course of the last 3 years. But generally speaking, the rule is the position that you are offering must require a degree in a specific field, and that individual that you're sponsoring must have that degree. And so we see very frequently in the tech space, all of your computer scientists, your software engineers, anything having to do with computers is typically an occupation that we can't fill with just U.S. workers here in the United States.
The need is everywhere. We need that talent. And
that's correct.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so we see, I would say, even with our non-tech clients, half of the U.S. immigration programs, let's take a financial institution, large financial institution, half of the individuals that they're sponsoring, on average, are going to be their IT professionals. So not necessarily on the finance side of the house, but they're on the tech side of the house. And so many of the H-1B visas have been allotted just because of need to tech workers.
Mm-hmm. But I think that is an important point. It doesn't impact the tech industry exclusively. It really does cross industries. It's affecting many, many different industries within this country.
Because there's so much tech behind it.
That's right. Tech touches almost every industry.
So give us some examples. Is it in nursing, for example? Or is it, what are some of the other examples?
Well, you may have major hospitals who do have their IT services.
Ah, okay.
Maybe impacted.
Okay.
So that's usually where we're seeing it in the different industries.
Yeah. And where we've been seeing a lot of pushback in the last few years is as our business models change, and so there's a lot of intersection now between business and tech, right? So you may not just have that software engineer anymore, but you might have someone who is a business intelligence analyst or a risk analyst who needs the tech side and the finance side to be able to do their job. And what we've seen is that there's some confusion or pushback from the agencies to be able to understand, you know, when we said that you need a degree in a specific field, okay, well, now we're kind of crossing industries. So how does that impact the H-1B?
It gets tricky as far as that goes. Absolutely.
That's another challenge, I guess, that we're seeing, is that the immigration system isn't necessarily keeping up with the real-world business needs. Those blended positions, they're having trouble wrapping their arms around that.
Yep.
And so that's the same parallel that's happening around the world in so many other dimensions, that we're not keeping up with what is needed and the kinds of jobs that people need to have. And we see that right in Pittsburgh. So we see the fact that, for example, autonomous vehicle companies need mechanics now. And, you know, so no one, who would have thought of that a few years? Not saying that that's an immigration issue, but it affects the whole way that people think about jobs.
Absolutely.
So one last thing before we go into a break. Are there country specifics in terms of these 65 plus 20,000 jobs? Are there any criteria for any country, or is it all just, you know, whoever gets there first and meets the criteria?
And we get about 30 seconds.
It's truly a lottery. I mean, it doesn't, the country of origin does not come into play whatsoever in terms of getting the H-1B. But obviously, we're seeing certain nationalities are overrepresented in the H-1B program. Okay. The tech industry, you know, generally we see a lot of nationals of India and China.
Absolutely.
Who are the ones who are dealing with the shortage of the H-1B more than some of the other nationalities.
Excellent. Very cool. Hey, we're taking a quick break. We're coming right back with a lot more talking about immigration, H-1B stuff, hanging out with Laura Garvin and Shannon Donnelly of Morgan Lewis. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
From the Pittsburgh Technology Council. Learn more about us at pghtech.org. Hang on. We'll be right back after this quick break. See, Audrey, I lived up to my word. I told you. We're coming back with more about immigration reform. Things are happening here, hanging out with Laura Garvin and Shannon Donnelly of Morgan Lewis. Thanks for continuing to hang out with us here in the Huntington Bank studio with us. Can't wait to keep this conversation going. This H-1B stuff is just super, super critical to tech in general, but especially tech in Pittsburgh.
So where do we want to pick up? Let's see. We talked a little bit about what's happening in H-1B world and some of the importance in terms of particularly the tech constituency that we serve. So let's dig a little deeper in terms of the issues.
Yeah, I think the H-1B issues right now are having to do with the new registration system. And so in this particular fiscal year H-1B lottery, there is a change. And no longer, according to USCIS and implemented recently, was a new registration system. And that registration system allows employers to register every foreign national that they're looking to sponsor in the H-1B lottery. They have from March 1st to March 20th to do that. And if the system works, USCIS will then contact all the employers between the 20th and the 1st of April to let them know who was accepted towards the cap. In theory, this seems incredibly efficient.
But I have a feeling it's not.
Well,
you said in theory.
So just to back up. So historically, the way you did the lottery was everyone actually prepared a huge paper filing and had to FedEx it into USCIS.
I remember that.
Yeah. So it was very time intensive.
Imagine all the envelopes stacked up there.
FedEx loved it.
Lord,
but it was very time intensive, and it cost the employers. The companies had to pay the legal fees to prepare these petitions. So now this new registration system that Shannon is explaining, it's electronic. It's a database that the government has built. So in theory, it sounds very efficient because we're not spending all the time preparing the petitions. But the question is, how much can we actually rely on this new system? It's been fairly untested so far.
Right. And so in order to prepare for this cap, we've had a lot of conversations with our tech clients and other clients who utilize the H-1B program. And because we don't know exactly how the technology is going to roll out and whether there will be hiccups, employers have taken one of three different approaches to this year's cap. Number one, for those that are relatively conservative, or for the tech companies, as an example, who file thousands of these types of applications, many of these organizations have just decided to proceed sort of status quo. They're going to prepare all the paper filings so that in the event that the system crashes or it's not working, they're ready to file everything on
April
1.
They got backup.
They have backup.
Very cool. Okay.
And frankly, I would say
do that.
A majority of our client base has done that.
It makes sense.
The second approach has been a little bit less, but a moderate approach, where they're at least getting that LCA filed. The LCA is a piece of the filing where the employer must get certification from the Department of Labor that they are paying either the prevailing wage or the actual wage in the metropolitan statistical area where the employees will be based. And that particular piece is critical. Without that, you can't file an H-1B.
Oh, wow.
So for those who didn't want to go all in.
Right. It kind of props the door open for
you.
Yeah.
So how do they access that? They would probably look to a firm like yours
right.
to help you navigate through that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And then there are some who are really taking advantage of the new system and I think crossing their fingers and hoping it works. And they're just submitting their registrations. And I've seen this more in cases where, it's a very small employer who's maybe sponsoring one person, and chances of selection are probably not
pretty
that
low.
Great.
So just do it this way, see what happens, and move it.
And if you're selected, if you get that notification through the registration system that the case has been selected, you have 90 days to file. So if you're just working on one case, 90 days is...
That gives you enough time. You can
exactly.
call your lawyer up, get the paperwork.
But if you're filing hundreds to thousands...
Yeah,
90 days.
Not going to happen. Right. Interesting.
Yeah. And so, given the landscape right now, in terms of the amount of talent, we're going to be selfish now and just talk about Pittsburgh, is we have so many people who come here from around the world that study. and work with some of the best and brightest. And what happens is we really can't keep them. So what are some strategies? What's the advice that you two wise women attorneys would give us as we're planning and thinking about, you know, economic development and prosperity and building companies, which is the world that we're in?
Okay. Well, we look at a variety of things. So many of these individuals who are coming out of the universities either have, in the tech space, they're probably a STEM degree program, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
So they will have, through their F student visa, mm-hmm. they will have 12 months OPT plus another 24-month STEM extension. So they've got 3 years, and they've got potentially three bites at the apple.
Okay, so there's H-1B cycles that can go through while being here legally, right?
Exactly.
But that does require that they work for an employer who's E-verified. So if you are a company that wants to make yourself open and help your foreign national workers,
so you have to be
registering
E-verified.
For E-Verify would certainly
and
help.
And that's
them.
Something that you would help with?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so we'd like to see, with organizations that have big populations like the tech companies, we like to see, as soon as recruitment is working and they're bringing these folks in, we like to have all of that information forwarded to us ASAP so that we can just sort of start that stream of when are we going to apply, how are we going to apply. And typically these are organizations that are very fluent and familiar with the H-1B program, and they know that they're going to bring folks in and they want to be able to retain them in the U.S. Unfortunately, there are occasions where we might get to the end of that three-year stream and we still haven't gotten an H-1B approval. Start the conversation a little bit earlier for those where we're coming up on that third bite in the apple, and we talk about whether or not the person is performing where they need to be performing. Is this someone where it's worth thinking about alternatives? If we start thinking about alternatives, we start thinking about where else in the world.
Okay, this is where you can help find
them.
This is where you can go.
Yeah,
to go
okay.
to.
Yep.
Or how about getting them married off, right?
Well, you know,
the program there.
That's sort of like where I'm at.
Getting ready to say, you know, there are ways to do this.
As we always say, it is not worth it unless you are truly in love.
Okay.
Well, I say that for foreign nationals as well as American citizens.
Right, exactly.
You know, I think the immigration process and the strategy is just so personal for the situation. Mm-hmm. So really, if we can give advice to companies about, you know, what's the best way to handle your immigration program, is make it a priority. Think about immigration first, you know. All too often, we get companies coming to us when their F1 employee is, you know, at the end of that STEM OPT period. So if you really prioritize it and make sure that you come to the immigration attorney.
Be proactive on this, right?
And let us look at, you know, all of the available strategies, because, you know, there may be strategies that are available on the first year but not on the third year of that
Interesting,
OPT.
Right. So, yeah, as soon as you know someone you think you want to recruit, make sure you get the paperwork started, you get the foundation laid.
Give
you guys a call. Absolutely.
So people want to reach out to you. Would they go to the Morgan Lewis website?
Well, they can go to the Morgan Lewis website, and they'll see that we actually have a pretty robust team. So Laura and I are members of East and West Coast team. We have a team of about 50 who sit in the Washington, D.C. office.
Okay.
We're supported by non-lawyer professionals who assist us,
mm-hmm.
and we have 7 attorneys mm-hmm. that work on the East Coast, including mm-hmm. Miami and New York. And then we have our partners on the West Coast also working considerably with the tech companies on the West Coast, as you can imagine. But yes, you can find us on the website, or certainly you can contact us at our email addresses, shannon.donnelly@morganlewis.com.
And laura.garvin@morganlewis.com. I'd also like to say I do attend a lot of Steelers games, so
that's
I'm
good.
Happy.
Yeah.
Meet anyone at a Steelers game, Penguins, any reason to come back.
We'll meet you on level C at Heinz Field.
Thank you so much.
As far as it is. No,
Thank you. That's
fantastic. And like I said, I mean, Morgan Lewis is one of these law firms. I mean, just it is like one of these pillars in Pittsburgh when it comes to things going on in tech around here. I mean, they've been locked up with the tech council since our foundation, our founding,
right.
36 years ago. And I always tell our listeners and our members out there, there that, like, seriously, like your law firm is like your partner, like, throughout everything you need. And, you know, and immigration now is one of those key things, which is just so important because it's the talent that Audrey keeps talking about that I stay up at night worrying about. And so having you guys stop by is fantastic. Yeah.
And I'd just like to say one thing that I think distinguishes our team. And as Laura highlighted, we truly are partners with our clients.
Definitely.
We don't, we run our practice in a way where it's very apparent that we care not only about what the businesses think are important, but also what the people
definitely
think that are important. And that's something that
it definitely shows. Yeah.
I think distinguishes our practice.
Well, thank you both for the time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Us.
Thank you for having us.
We definitely could have deeper conversations about this, but I appreciate all that you've shared with us. And
absolutely. Good stuff.
Yeah.
We need to have you guys come back on sometime very soon because these
anytime.
Are topics we've got to keep out there and keep the conversations flowing. Hey, we're taking a quick break. We've got a ton more Tech Vibe Radio coming right at you, I swear. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
We're from the Pittsburgh Technology Council. Learn more about us at pghtech.org and then follow us on Twitter at pghtech. Welcome back. You are listening to Tech Vibe Radio. This very Wednesday night. It's our final segment of the evening, Audrey. We've got George Potts hanging out with us from the Fifth
Influence. Who's George Potts?
Yeah, absolutely. George, first off, thanks for hanging out with us, man.
It's a pleasure to be here this evening. Thanks.
Yeah, it's good to have you here in the studio with us, as far as that is.
You've got a lot of stuff that you're working on these days.
He gave us some serious notes, Audrey.
I love it.
Excited about this. And it's all
we're going to stump you.
I'm looking forward to it. So
there you go.
It's our new segment called Stump George Potts.
We're a social forward digital agency, but you may very well stump us.
No. So, you're unstumpable, George.
So we'll that's see. Your pitch? Your pitch is?
We're a social forward digital advertising agency. We do a lot in the issue advocacy space, but also in brand marketing.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what we're going to be talking about today is the social media platforms and the rapidly changing landscape in regards to what you can and cannot do in regards to political advertising and issue advocacy on this platform.
So much has changed so quickly around this.
That's right.
So has it really changed? So let's set the table for us and tell us what's going on.
Well, it's dramatically changed. But let's take a step back a little bit. So if you recall the spring of 2018, in April, Mark Zuckerberg testified in front of Congress regarding the 2016 election and Cambridge Analytica and data sharing. And then you had the ongoing focus on Russian meddling in the 2016 election. So in response that summer, for the first time, Facebook required advertisers that were going to be advertising for political campaigns and issues, and they actually define issues very, very broadly as opposed to some other social platforms, that you need to be authorized to place that advertising on the platform. And then other platforms followed suit. So Twitter and Google also required authorization late summer, early fall. That had pretty much been the status quo up until late last fall, November, with the increased attention on the 2020 presidential campaign and the recent testimony of Mueller and others in Congress in regards to Russian meddling, that the platforms decided to make changes and some radical changes. Twitter made a big announcement in November, really unbeknownst to the entire company. The CEO was on a radio show similar to Tech Vibe and announced on that show that they were no longer going to accept political advertising.
Right.
Yeah, that was kind of like,
I wish
whoa.
You would have done it on Tech Vibe.
Yeah, it would have been awesome to be
He would have gotten better response.
Very, very probably.
Absolutely.
But their own political team did not even know. I was on my way to Buffalo for a client meeting, and my phone lit up and said, "Hey, do you know the CEO of Twitter just announced they're no longer doing political advertising?" I was immediately on the phone with the political team in Washington, D.C. saying, well, what does this mean exactly, and when does this take place, and so forth. So they had a gradual change and did ban all political advertising starting in December. But then other platforms such as TikTok, Snapchat followed suit. LinkedIn never really allowed political advertising, but they got a little bit more specific in regards to what they meant by that. So then from those announcements in regards to banning political advertising, there was a lot of focus on Facebook and Google. Are they going to ban political advertising? Will they allow political advertising? And Google really encompasses YouTube and search and so forth.
And this is where all the advertising happens at the end of
the day
when it comes to online.
That's right. And so with the changes, it really dramatically changed what 501c3s and brands can do when it comes to advertising around issues.
Because
Facebook, Facebook still allows political advertising. Google allows political advertising, but they have stricter guidelines. So just over the last 2 months, Facebook required everyone that had already been authorized to be reauthorized. So you had to go through a reauthorization process.
You had to go back through the process again.
Yes. Yeah. And authorization is two levels. Individuals need to be authorized on Facebook to place issue and political advertising, as well as the organization. So there's two levels of authorization that needs to take place.
Yeah. I like the sounds of this. I mean, I know it's probably a pain in the butt, but at the end of the day, I think this is going to do a lot to help kind of maybe lock some stuff down, right?
Yeah. I believe it will. Facebook also introduced in 2018 what's called the ads library. So you're able to go in and look for any advertiser, and you can, whether they're brand or whether they're political or issue,
okay,
you can pull up all the advertising they ever placed on the platform.
Oh, that's cool. I had no idea about that.
See what the spend was behind that advertising. And that's how, you know, a lot of people had done studies of what Trump had done in 2016 in regards to his election.
That's a cool level of transparency there.
It's awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, and you can see individual ads that were catered to vastly different segments of target audiences in election or for an issue or so forth. So it's great transparency. The other thing that Facebook did in response to the greater scrutiny is now more detailed what are called waivers. So before, you could always see, as you know, with a Facebook post, when it's sponsored, it says sponsored and it has the profile pic of the page that is sponsoring the ad. Now there's a very detailed waiver that has a greater level of context and description in regards to who's paying for the ad and what the purpose of the ad is. All issue and political advertising has to have those waivers. And Facebook, personally, when I say personally, they approve each individual waiver. So some of those waivers are approved by algorithm, but others are spot checked. And so
they got a human being there that's physically outside the algorithms just making sure.
Exactly. So you have a lot of organizations that don't understand, number one, that they need to be authorized to place issue advertising. Political, they know, but when it comes to issue advertising, and let me share.
Yeah, give an example
of an issue. I'm going to pull up the notes here. So Facebook defines issues, and this is the exhaustive list.
Okay.
Civil and social rights. Anything related to crime, economy, education, environmental politics, guns, health, immigration, political values and governance, security and foreign policy.
Huh.
Now,
that's broad.
It's very broad. And unlike
That leaves them a lot of wiggle room to
– Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And unlike Twitter, so Twitter defines an issue related to political content, civic engagement, economic growth, environmental stewardship, social equity causes, also broad. But Google, actually, you need to reference legislation. So in Facebook, it's very, very broad, and legislation doesn't have to be identified to be prohibited. On Twitter, you can talk about an issue.
But it's like got a link to actual legislation?
Actually, no. It's the reverse.
Oh, okay.
You can talk about environmental stewardship, but you can't reference a piece of legislation.
You can't
talk about a candidate. You can't talk about you can't even talk about a government agency.
Wow.
And so
that makes sense.
There's vast differences. Most advertisers don't understand. Number one, on all of them, you have to be authorized. So on Twitter, to do issues advertising, even though they ban political, you have to be authorized. So authorization is number one. And then secondly, they have very detailed rules in regards to what you can and cannot do. Facebook tends to be the most liberal. Google's the next, and then Twitter is the most locked down.
They got the clamps on it, man.
Very much so, and so much so that on Twitter, you could be identified as ineligible to run advertising on the platform overall if they've identified you as being in violation of their advertising rules, such as in political or issue. And that could mean you try to run advertising, you're not authorized. Or even a landing page. So Twitter takes it as far as the landing page, similar to like weaponry on social platforms. So if you try to you can't advertise a weapon, but say, for instance, you're Field & Stream, okay? And you have an advertisement for a hunting vest. If you go to a landing page that features weaponry,
that's a no-no.
You can't do that. You have to have a separate landing page.
Just for the vest.
Twitter has applied that same rule now to issues. So say you want to talk about environmental stewardship. If you go to a landing page that references a specific piece of legislation or effort,
gotcha.
Right. You can't run advertising on the platform. So you have to understand the individual rules by platform, and many organizations don't. Many right. organizations that we work with, they'll say, let's talk a little bit, and our advertising is not being approved on Facebook, and they think it may be the 20% rule with images. Mm-hmm. There's too much text.
Okay.
And we'll just dig in like, you didn't apply to, it's not running because you're not authorized to run advertising in this genre of issues. Or even if you are authorized, your waivers aren't set up properly. They're not approved by Facebook. Or in Twitter, your organic content, say you're Sustainable Pittsburgh, and you're talking about sustainability business practices, but you're referencing certain pieces of legislation in your organic tweets. Twitter actually looks at your organic content as well and will rule you ineligible to run.
Based on that, too.
Based on that as well.
Wow.
Now, so, Facebook doesn't do that. Google doesn't do that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So essentially, if I'm even writing comments about those things that have been delineated that you just mentioned in terms of the issues requirement, I may be prohibited from advertising as a result of the language that I've been using.
That is possible on Twitter specifically.
On Twitter specifically.
On Twitter specifically. On Facebook, that would not, right. would not apply.
Okay.
But on Twitter specifically, they are looking at the entire makeup of your presence on the platform.
Wow.
Comments, yeah. organic posts, and then obviously your paid campaigns. Yeah.
So what are the services that you would offer? So if people are fretting about this, how can you help them?
Yeah, it's a great question. So one of the first questions we ask when clients are, especially 501(c)s that are talking about issues, we guide them by platform. So we have cheat sheets, even without engaging us, we have cheat sheets that we provide clients and say, okay, here's what you can and cannot do on Facebook and what you need to do in order to advertise in this area. Here's what you can and cannot do on Google. Here's what you can and cannot do on Twitter. And then once we're engaged, we ensure that proper authorizations are in place and maintained. We make sure that on Facebook, the proper waivers are in place. And then when it comes to advertising itself, in those cheat sheets, there's a lot of specifics in regards to what targeting you can and cannot do. So for instance, on Google, you cannot, when it comes to the political issue advertising, you can't do custom audiences any longer, which means you can't upload an email list, you can't remarket and so forth.
Gotcha.
You're limited to like a state or regional geography.
Absolutely.
Where in Facebook, you can still do custom audiences. And in Twitter, same type of thing. They have limited targeting. So what we do is we help clients with authorization verification, maintaining waivers and the proper approaches to how to do it. And then lastly, in regards to the parameters for targeting and how to properly set up campaigns.
Very cool. And if people want to learn more about Fifth Influence, where can they go? Because you need a partner in this, and you guys can do that. Where
can
they learn more?
Thank you very much. They can go to fifthinfluence.com.
Excellent.
Very basic website, and it's Fifth spelled out, F-I-F-T-H, influence.com.
George Potts, you're the best. Thanks for hanging out with Tech Vibe Radio tonight. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
Tune in next week for more Tech Vibe Radio. Learn more about the Tech Council at pghtech.org.